Hey, Leading Learning listener, if improving as a learning business professional is one of your goals for 2026, make sure to go to leadinglearning.com/summit.
The Learning Business Summit is the only event laser-focused on professionals who lead and work in market-facing businesses that serve adult learners. Across 3 days online, you'll connect with peers and experts to strengthen both your knowledge and your network.
Featuring hands-on practitioners and subject matter experts, the live education sessions are designed for participation, reflection, and, most importantly, action to boost the reach, revenue, and impact of your learning business.
And because leveraging technology is essential for any learning business, the summit also includes demos of LearnTech platforms.
It all happens online January 27th, 28th, and 29th. Go to leadinglearning.com/summit to get all the details and join us for the Learning Business Summit.
Now, on with the episode.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb. And this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
There. This is episode 99 of the Leading Learning Podcast. This time around, Jeff and I talk about the state of learning and technology in the association sector. This is a topic that is prompted by the fact that we are about to publish the fifth edition of our Association Learning Plus Technology Report.
Before we get to that discussion, though, we want to thank your membership, the podcast sponsor for the third quarter of 2017. Your membership's learning management system is specifically designed for professional education with a highly flexible and intuitive system that customizes the learning experience. Your membership's LMS seamlessly integrates with key systems to manage all of your educational content formats in one central location while providing powerful tools to create and deliver assessments, evaluations, and learning communities. You can find out more about your membership at yourmembership.com.
For our resource for this episode, we want to, appropriately enough, highlight our Association Learning Plus Technology Report. The report is based on a survey of a broad range of trade and professional associations, and Association Learning Plus Technology provides the most comprehensive insights currently available on the use of technology to enhance and enable education in the association sector. You can access that report for free by going to tagoras.com/learntech. And if you're listening to this episode before September 15th, 2017, you can grab that issue of the report and you'll automatically be sent the next edition, the 2017 edition, which we'll be releasing after September 15th.
Well, it's amazing to me that we are now on the fifth edition of this report, and it's been more than 5 years that we've been doing it. We actually ran our first survey for this report in 2008, so we're coming up on a decade now. And then, I mean, even before that, we kind of had a prototype version of it back in the company that we owned and ran before Tagoras.
Yeah, that's right. We've been at it for quite a while now, and it's been our tradition here on the Leading Learning Podcast to step back and reflect. And so we thought this would be a good episode to devote to the report, to talk a little bit about why we do it, the changes that we've seen over the years, and perhaps most importantly, how we feel the report and the data can be useful to organizations.
So maybe let's start with that first one, you know, why we started doing this report in the first place. And you know, I just mentioned that we began doing it when we were running our last company. Tagoras is not the first company that we've had together. We had a company called iSoft for many years where we actually built and managed and implemented a learning management system, built a lot of e-learning content for trade and professional associations. And, you know, as we found, we were working more and more with nonprofits in general and with trade and professional associations as part of that nonprofit sector. We felt there was a gap in knowledge about what was going on with e-learning out in that field at the time. And so, you know, even back in the Tagoras days, we wanted to do something that would contribute to the field, that would, you know, give some benchmarks and help organizations just kind of, you know the lay of the land. And of course, as we began working with Tagoras and were really focused specifically on trade and professional associations, that's where this particular report really came to focus and how those organizations are using learning and technology. And, you know, of course, at the same time, this was a way for us do our own content marketing. We're you know, big proponents of content marketing here at Tagoras as a way for us to put some content out there that would establish our thought leadership and give us, you know, hopefully some authority in the field, become a trusted provider of information about the field. So, you know, we feel like it has done that for us to a large extent. We certainly hear a lot about the report from folks. And you know, and then the final thing to mention is it has actually been a revenue source for us. It is part of our business model. It's not a big part of our business model, but we originally charged for the report and then eventually moved to getting sponsorships for the report. And it's a good way to right now to engage with the vendor community in particular. It's something that they know that we do, and they'll also, you know, track this data that's part of the sector. So, you know, contributing to the field, building our own reputation, and a small amount of revenue from it. So those are some of the, you know, the reasons that motivated us to do this and to continue to do it.
Yeah. So I think that having that multiple benefits both for ourselves and we think for the field at large. And so, as we mentioned, we first released a report in 2009, and it was called Association E-Learning 2009. And then we released the next report in 2011, and with that, we shifted the name of the report to Association Learning Plus Technology. So the first one of those was in 2011, and then we had one in 2014, 2016, and now we are on the cusp of releasing 2017. So as we've noted before, this is the fifth of the reports in this series. And I'll comment a little bit on that change in titles. Like I said, we first released it as Association E-Learning. That was way back in 2009, which, you know, I think internet years are a lot like dog years.
Yeah.
And so what happened is that we started to feel like, you know, e-learning comes with a certain amount of baggage. I think there are baggage on at least multiple levels. One level being just for some people, they think kind of narrowly about e-learning. Maybe for them that just is really sort of self-paced courses.
Right.
And that type of content, that specific type of technology-enabled learning. The other thing is that we also were beginning to see a shift that I think has only become more pronounced over the last few years, which is just this fact that as technology becomes so ingrained in our lives and the way that we live and do work and the way that we learn, this idea of e-learning being distinct from other types of learning, it's losing some of that, some of the distinctiveness there. Some of those boundaries are beginning to blur. And so we started talking more about technology being used to enhance or enable education. So that can mean things that are totally done online. So could be those self-paced courses that a lot of people associate directly with e-learning, but it could also be more broadly technology used in the context alongside a classroom course or experience, so you have more of a blended experience, or even in more recent years as we've started to probe around the idea of sustaining learning. So maybe you do have a place-based learning experience, but then you're using technology to periodically check back in with folks, remind them of key points, see what application they're making of what's been taught.
And that's become particularly important as we've seen the rise of social media and, you know, social media tools for, as you're saying, sustaining learning, extending learning, creating informal learning experiences, and then the focus on community and community platforms. And we'll comment some on that in a little bit when we talk about the data, particularly in the association sector. That's become a big thing. And we see that as part of learning, but it's not what people have traditionally thought of as e-learning. So we wanted to, as you said, kind of broaden our approach to it and make it clear that this was a much bigger phenomenon than what people typically thought of as e-learning.
And one of the other things that we've done over the years of offering the report and then the surveys that go behind each issue of the report is that we really clarified in 2016, so in the report prior to this one we're about ready to release, that while respondents must represent a membership organization, we welcome respondents from both nonprofit and for-profit membership organizations. So really our focus is on the idea of having a membership that you're trying to serve and that you're serving with learning, and often technology-enabled or enhanced learning.
So those are some of the ways that our language has changed. And those language changes really are a response to the context change that, we've seen out there, sort of the whole environment in which learning and technology are being used now. And, you know, we already commented on the rise of social media and, community, but I mean, some of the other just really important things that have been going on over the, past decade or so, and to a large extent have been really the basis of our business, is it that market for lifelong learning, continuing education, professional development has changed so much. We know that competition has increased in just about every field, and in some fields it's really cutthroat at this point. But most organizations are experiencing more competition around their continuing education and professional development offerings. As a result, we're seeing downward price pressure. A lot of organizations, wrestle with pricing, and how do they compete with free? In many instances, a lot of free learning out there, and probably a symptom of that. There have been reports lately, research done lately, saying that there's actually a global decline in e-learning revenue, or at least self-paced e-learning revenue, and that's expected to continue and to amount to a 6 to 7% decline in the coming years. And when you talk about the global market for e-learning, that translates into billions of dollars, I mean, more than $10 billion drop in, revenue. So there's that downward price pressure, downward revenue happening, again, mostly tied to self-paced. That doesn't apply to, all learning formats. And, along those lines, we've seen the rise of, a lot of different new formats. We've seen MOOCs come along. We've seen what's happened with mobile. We've seen things like micro-learning and micro-credentialing come along. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And then I think overall, just as a blanket change, we've seen the emergence of really adult lifelong learning and certainly e-learning as big business. I mean, we've got companies like, lynda.com that got bought by LinkedIn for $1.5 billion. That's billion with a B. We've seen the rise of the big MOOC players like edX and Coursera. We've seen Udemy, which is catering to subject matter experts. Amazon.com now has courses offered on its site. You can actually go shop for courses on Amazon. That's a big shift towards commodity status, really, for self-paced e-learning in particular. So all of that is going on, and that's kind of the context in which this report has been happening over the years. And for us, a really fascinating and interesting context to be reporting on.
And so, Jeff, you were just talking about those kind of bigger world shifts out there. And I think one thing it would be fun to do is to talk a little bit about how some of the data that we've been collecting over these years has changed. And I think the obvious place to start is with just the prevalence of e-learning or the use of technology for learning. And so back in the 2009 report, 61.1% of respondents said that their organizations were currently using e-learning. And we defined e-learning very broadly back then. We said it's also known as computer-based training or online distance education. But we said that it could include webcasts, self-paced tutorials, podcasts, facilitated discussions, etc. We were very broad in that. So at that point, 2009 report, we had 61.1%. If we skip ahead to the 2017 result, we did shift the question a little bit. We changed it in 2014. As we mentioned earlier, we've kind of tried to move away from the use of the term e-learning. And so the way we phrased the question from 2014 and on is that, are you using technology to deliver or to enhance learning? And again, we meant that very broadly, webcasts, webinars, self-paced tutorials, virtual conferences, blended classrooms, all of those things. So in 2017, 92.6% of respondents say, yes, my organization offers technology-enabled or technology-enhanced learning. So that's a huge jump from 2009 to 2017. So we went from, 61.1% to 92.6%. And so I think the clear takeaway there is just that, the use of technology for learning has become mainstream. And so it's really not a question for organizations about whether to use technology for learning, but how best to use technology to support learning.
That's true. I mean, it's a fact of life at this point. So, if you're an organization that's not doing it, we always say, don't just copy other organizations. That's not really being strategic. But this is one where, you know, if you're not doing this yet, you really need to be asking yourself why. And then there should be a very legitimate reason why you're not doing it if you're doing any other kind of education whatsoever. And we should note, and we'll try to keep noting as we go along, the statistics that we're talking about here, the data that we're talking about, we will include in the show notes for the episode, along with some additional data as well. You can always find our show notes by going to the episode number. So in this case, it would just be leadinglearning.com/episode99, and you'll be able to get some good data there. Now, another area, you know, learning and technology has shot up. And of course, at the same time, we've seen some of the main technology that tends to be used for learning also grow. And the main one that people tend to associate with online learning, of course, is a learning management system. Learning management system is usually the way you're going to upload and configure and publish and manage the different types of courses that you offer out to your audience. And so back in 2009, and this was when it was called, you know, the e-learning report still, we asked, you know, whether organizations were using an LMS or not. So, you know, does your organization currently use an LMS for its delivering its education? And in 2009, it was 34.4% of organizations that indicated that they were doing that. Jump forward to 2017 when we asked, you know, basically the same question, and it's 66.9%. So, you know, we've seen it almost double from a third to two-thirds of organizations that, you know, are using a formal platform, which is what an LMS represents, for the delivery of their online learning. And, you know, we expect to continue to see that grow. There's been a lot of investment, a lot of shakeup in that LMS arena in the association world recently. We do a lot of, or have traditionally done a lot of LMS selection type work, and we certainly have seen, you know, that business grow and grow and grow over the years.
And so another platform that we've begun asking about is webinar or webcast platforms. And, you know, as you were saying, Jeff, we ask in each survey for the set of respondents that say, hey, yes, we're doing technology-enabled learning, then we ask follow-up questions, one being around whether they use a learning management system. Then in 2014, we also started asking about webinar or webcast platforms. And so that first year that we collected the data, 84.4% were already using a webinar or webcast platform. So that's already higher than the LMS usage there. And in the 2017 report, 91.8% of folks are using a webinar or webcast platform. So we're essentially at saturation point with these types of platforms. And we're going to talk in a little bit about the types of offerings. And so it's not too surprising to see how prevalent these platforms are when we talk about the types of technology-enabled learning that are being offered. And so we'll kind of close that loop in just a minute.
But those are the two big platforms, obviously, a learning management system and a webinar platform. Those are now typically integrated. Most LMSs are going to have, you know, some pre-built integration bridges with the big webinar platforms, the GoToWebinars and the Adobes and the WebExes of the world. So we see that combination now. But another type of platform that that we are seeing grow pretty substantially and expect to see a big uptick in this is the use of community platforms for learning. And we started asking about this back in 2009, and back then we characterized it as a private social networking site that, you know, in parentheses, was only for approved users. Only approved users can join it. And we kind of listed that among social media tools. This was before, you know, the HireLogix and other big, you know, community platforms came along and really established that as a separate vertical in the market. Back then, we had 16.1% of respondents say that they were using some sort of private social networking site for learning. And this was, you know, this was for learning, not just kind of general usage. Jump forward to 2017. We've changed the terminology some. We now describe it as a private online community platform because that's really how it's thought about out in the marketplace now. But the new number is 37.4%. So from 16.1% to 37.4%. Obviously, we've more than doubled there, and we expect to see the uptick in adoption continue to accelerate, continue to grow. If it follows kind of the same path as LMSs have, then we're going to see it get up past the 70% mark within the next decade. And given the popularity of these types of platforms, I wouldn't be surprised to see it shoot well past that.
Well, so I hinted at the fact that we were going to talk about the different types of offerings. So let's get to that now. And what I'll say is that ever since we started offering the survey and the report, we've asked about whether organizations offer real-time webcasts or webinars and recorded or on-demand webcasts and webinars. And those have always been the most popular type of technology-enabled learning that we've asked about. And so in 2009, there were 67.1% offering real-time webinars, and then 56% offering on-demand webinars. If we skip to 2017, real-time webinars are offered by 90% of organizations, and recorded are actually a little bit higher. 91.4% are offering recorded webinars. So again, like I said, given how prevalent webinars are as a form of learning, it's not too surprising that we saw those really high numbers for the webinar platforms earlier.
Right, right. And we've seen, at least modest growth across most formats over the years, I think, as organizations have tended to add more options to their portfolio. One other area we'll just note here as having seen some pretty significant growth is blended learning. And for anybody who's been in the e-learning world in general, blended learning has been a buzz term for quite a while. Probably not quite as much buzz around it now, but fortunately there seems to be some more action around it now. And this is basically blending different formats of learning. And in the context that we're talking about, blending online technology-driven learning with offline sort of learning, classroom-based learning. So we started asking about this back in 2009, and back then 19% of respondents told us that they were blending classroom-based programs with online programs. Jump forward to 2017.
No, it was actually 15.5%.
15.5%, okay. My bad there on reading the stats. Jump forward to 2017, and it's up to 38.9%. Almost 40% of organizations saying that they're doing something with blending the different formats of learning using technology. And we see that as a positive sign because it tends to support good learning practices when that's happening.
And one of the other questions that we've asked about almost from the get-go, we didn't do it in 2009, but from the 2011 report and on, is about strategy. And this is something that I think is pretty near and dear to our hearts,
Indeed.
Jeff.
Yeah.
And
this kind of breaks our heart here, too, a little
That's right, near and dear, and it's a little heartbreaking to see the stats. Basically, we've seen strategy for the use of technology to enable or enhance learning kind of remain pretty flat. When we first asked in the 2011 report, 22% said that they that their organization has a formal, documented strategy for e-learning. And then in 2014, which was the next report, we rephrased the question slightly to remove use of that e-learning term, and so we asked if organizations have a formal documented strategy for how technology will be used to enable or enhance learning. So about the same, just 23.4% said that they have a formal strategy like that. In 2016, it dropped a little bit down to 18% saying they had a formal strategy. And then this year, we're kind of back up into those earlier ranges. 23% say that they have a strategy to guide how they're going to use technology to enable or enhance learning. This year, for the first time, we added in an additional strategy question. So, previous years, we were focusing on this idea of, do you have a strategy that really helps govern your use of technology for learning? This year, we kept that question and then added one that's more general. So we asked, does your organization have a formal, documented strategy for its learning and education business? And we asked that question of all respondents. So not just those that say, yeah, we're offering technology-enabled learning, but all respondents, even the handful who said, we don't offer technology-enabled learning. And so that group, the group that has a general learning strategy, is a bit higher, 37.7%. And that makes sense, that sort of general learning strategy, that would be a larger group, and then sort of a smaller subset would have one specifically focused on the use of technology for learning. But whether you're talking about the 37.7% that have the general learning strategy, or the, you know, under a quarter, the 23% that have a strategy for the use of technology for learning, I mean, that's pretty small. I mean, it seems like, given how essential strategy is for running a business, that, you know, we would certainly love to see those numbers be much higher.
And we certainly do hope to see them change over time. And, you know, we said earlier, part of doing this report was contributing to the field. We certainly hope that highlighting that as an issue helps to get more organizations and more organizational leaders, learning leaders, thinking about that and perhaps acting on developing a more formal strategy for their education programs, and then, of course, for their use of learning and technology. So one of the things we've started to ask about in recent years, because it's really, you know, emerged in recent years, is what we characterize as emerging formats for learning, because we've definitely seen, you know, some changes in recent times. We've seen the emergence of things like massive open online courses or MOOCs. We've seen flipped learning become a thing, where you're doing some of the learning online, some of the learning in the classroom, and they're supporting each other. Oftentimes, you're doing the online learning as a preparation for the classroom to make the classroom time more effective, more interactive. Gamified learning has become a big thing. You know, micro-credentials, digital badging, also something that's been emerging, and micro-learning, you know, these small chunks of learning. So we've started asking about all of these in recent versions of the survey, really beginning in 2014. And, you know, the main headline from that is that, you know, during the time that we've been asking, the numbers have gone up, but they're still quite low in terms of, you know, are associations actually using these new formats, the MOOCs, the flipped classes, gamified learning, et cetera. In general, the adoption rate has been below 15%, even as it's grown larger. It hasn't grown past 15% from respondents, except in the area of microlearning. And microlearning seems to be the one trend that's really catching. We heard that 18% of respondents were doing something with microlearning in 2014. In 2016 when we first asked about that. So that's been a really recent one that we've asked about. But just over the course of the last year, we've seen it grow to 30.1% as we're getting ready for this new version of the report. So, you know, a jump of more than 12% in that time period. And we've certainly seen a lot of buzz about microlearning, a lot of interest in microlearning. We've presented sessions and had people present sessions about microlearning at events that we've hosted or been involved with. So that definitely seems to be a growth area. And we're hoping we're going to see some growth in these other emerging formats as well.
Yeah, I think especially with the micro-credentials, I think there's a natural tie with micro-learning, and that is, in the 2017 report and data, that is the next most popular of these emerging formats, with 14.8% of respondents saying that they're doing something actively with those now. And so I think, as you're saying, I think we're poised for growth in at least those two areas in terms of micro-learning and micro-credentials.
And I think with micro-credentials and the whole digital badging thing in particular, I think there's a barrier there right now still in kind of operationalizing that. How do you actually make that happen, both from a technology standpoint and, you know, just the mechanics of how that works within the organization against, you know, existing certification programs and stuff like that. I would predict that we're going to hit a tipping point on that, like, really soon, and we're going to see that one just shoot up very quickly when it does go up.
One of the other questions that we added had to do with mobile learning. We did not ask about mobile learning in the 2009 report, but in 2011, we asked if organizations are offering mobile learning. And we asked that question very broadly. We just said, do you make some or all of your e-learning content available on a mobile device? So again, very broad. It could have just been that they had, you know, one of their offerings that was mobile friendly, and that would have qualified them to say yes. But even with that broad definition, it was a very small group that was actively offering mobile learning. It was 8.9% of respondents. If we skip to this year's data, 2017, 49.7% are offering M-learning of some sort. So, you know, we're right at 50%, and clearly that's a big jump, and I think ties into what we were talking about with micro-learning and micro-credentials as well. I feel like the mobile devices have helped make micro-learning really possible.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to see, you know, obviously continued growth in that. And of course, a lot of organizations are doing M-learning without even knowing they're doing M-learning because, you know, of course, people are using their phones and their iPads to access stuff. And in many cases, you know, organizations need to be checking their Google Analytics to see what kind of mobile action they're getting on their website in general, what those percentages are. And of course, those can be tied into what happens on a learning management system as well. So you can see how your content is being consumed, even if you didn't explicitly plan it for mobile learning. And a point that we always make related to that is that catalogs need to be ready for purchase of learning at this point as well, for mobile purchase of learning. Because so often, people who you're targeting for your learning experiences are getting those messages on their cell phones, on their smartphones via email. They're going to click a link right there. They need to be able to buy and then preferably consume right there as well. So, you know, to the extent that the organization overall hasn't gone mobile with its catalog and its e-commerce, we're certainly going to see more shift in that direction, and the learning function needs to be thinking about that.
One of the other questions we added, and this was a recent addition in the 2016 report, was about a chief learning officer. So we wanted to find out if anyone in the organization holds the CLO title or a similar C-level title that references learning, education, or knowledge. And we added this question because we thought it would be a good barometer for kind of the amount of respect and emphasis that is given to learning within the context of the organization. And so in the 2016 report, we had 42.2% of respondents saying yes, they have a CLO or a CLO-like person at their organization. And then this year, the data is right at one-third, 33.3% of respondents say they have a CLO.
And we're certainly hoping to see that number grow as well, and believe it will. You know, another thing that that we've asked about, and I think this probably, you know, relates back into strategy, relates back into that role of a CLO and somebody, you know, really thinking about the learning function, is if organizations are using technology to repeat, reinforce, and sustain learning. So not just the initial delivery, which obviously a lot of organizations are doing, but are you, you know, using it strategically to make sure that that learning is going to stick and stay around? And we started asking that in 2016, and of those who are actually using technology to enhance and enable learning, 31.5% said yes, that they are using it to sustain learning over time by, you know, repeating and reinforcing. In 2017, what will be released in the new report, is 33.7%. So, you know, very modest, if any, growth. There could be, you know, some statistical, may or may not be statistically significant there. You know, but at this point, really only about a third of organizations that are using technology in that way. And I mean, in many ways, that's the holy grail for truly delivering value, is, you know, not just publishing using technology, but also making sure that that learning is going to stick over time.
And then last year, we added two questions around data. And so we asked if organizations integrate, and this could be manually or through automation, but if they integrate the data that they collect in their learning technology platforms with the data from other technology platforms. So that might be, for example, data from a learning management system being integrated with data from an association management system. But again, both categories, the learning technology platforms, was left broad. So it could also be, instead of an LMS, could be a webinar platform, could be one of those online community platforms, and then the other type of platform, such as a membership management database or an AMS, again, that was left relatively broad. And we see about half of organizations doing some level of integration. So in 2016, 49.3%. In 2017, 47.1%. And then the other data question we asked about was whether organizations use that data that they're collecting in their learning technology platforms to make decisions about current and future educational products and services. And, you know, for us, this seems like a no-brainer, right? You have this data and you're learning what it is that people are buying or what they're completing or what their scores are or how much time they're spending, whatever that type of data you have, it seems like a no-brainer to make use of it. And I'd say we'd see, you know, decent but not great use of the data. In 2016, we had 18.7% of respondents saying they always make use of that data, and then another 29.1% saying they frequently make use of that data. So almost 50% making use of that kind of data always or frequently. In 2017, we had 14.9% saying they always use that data to inform their product decisions, and then 30.4% using it frequently. So a little less than 50%, you know, perhaps a small drop off, but you know, not that big a difference between the 2016 and 2017 data. But again, this is another place for us where it seems like just as having a strategy for what you're doing with your learning business and your use of technology for learning, that seems like an obvious place for organizations to devote some time and resources and mental energy. And similarly, I would say, you know, making use of the data that you are getting to help direct and inform your product decisions seems like a no-brainer.
Definitely. And so that's some data about data. And speaking of data, obviously, we've been throwing out quite a bit of it here. We'll note again that all of these stats, all of these data points that we're given are going to be available in the show notes for the episode, along with some additional data about some of the changes we've seen since 2009 or whenever we first started asking a question. Those show notes, again, you can always find at the episode number, in this case, leadinglearning.com/episode 99. And the one last point we'll make about, you know, the questions, the data before we kind of exit this segment of the episode is that we did drop some questions too. We've talked about questions that we've added. And so there have been things that we've taken off along the way just to make sure that people would complete the survey. It wasn't going to be too long, too overwhelming. And some that we just weren't getting, you know, necessarily great response on. But the main one that I'll note that we've dropped is around the pricing of online learning. We did use to try to get an estimate around different formats and how those different formats were being priced and tried to get a range on that. And did that for a little while. We eventually got to the point where we, you know, we weren't sure exactly how trustworthy the data was, just, you know, getting people to kind of give an average estimate. And also we increasingly got the feeling that people were just sort of taking those numbers and plugging them into their pricing strategy, which is the last thing that we want to promote. Pricing should be much, much more strategic than that. So we actually decided to pull the pricing questions, and we don't ask that anymore as part of the survey that underlies this report.
So Jeff, as you said, we want to kind of end this segment where we're looking at some of the changes in the data points over the years and talk about bigger picture, how we think the data in general, the report in general might be useful to organizations.
Yeah, definitely. Because I mean, this is all interesting, and of course, we're, you know, learning geeks and love all these kind of statistics, and we know a lot of the listeners are probably going to fall in that camp as well. But you know, how do you actually use this kind of report? And of course, you know, one of the main things that we hear from organizations is that they're taking data in the report, you know, whatever's relevant to their particular situation, and they're using that to make the business case within their organization for adding or growing their technology-based learning initiative. So, you know, if they're not doing e-learning yet, for example, this may be the data that they're going to take to their board, to their executive team, whatever the case might be, and say, we really need to be doing this. Or, you know, if they haven't yet looked at something like micro-learning, you know, they'll be looking at that to see what's going on out there. And as part of that, I think one thing that's great about the report that comes across is that size doesn't really matter with this. I mean, we're seeing different types of learning and technology initiatives happening across all sizes of organizations. You know, the data makes that clear. So again, you know, if you're making a business case, you're at a small organization, and you've got people telling you, well, you know, we can't afford to do this. This isn't something that a small organization does. Not the case. There's definitely good data in the report to help support your business case.
And then along with this idea of making a business case, I think another area where we know that the report can be useful and is being used is for benchmarking. And, you know, that might be part of you know, how you're making your business case, but even on its own, I think it can be useful to see where you stand and particularly relative to similar organizations. That said, there's a big caveat around this right here, right, which is that we are not by any means encouraging you and your organization to be a copycat. The report may be helpful in helping you identify some best practices from an operational standpoint, but there is no best practice when it comes to strategy. That's our bias anyway. You know, you can't really go out and copy someone else's strategy. The strategy really has to be organic and embedded in your organization and in your culture and in your goals. And so you also have to make sure that your strategy differentiates. So you can't just copy someone else and say, all right, this is going to work for us. So I guess it's a note of caution around, you know, even as you're kind of comparing your organization to the overall results from the survey, just be aware that, you know, just because something seems to be working for one organization doesn't mean it's going to be a silver bullet and necessarily work in your organization.
And you definitely have to actively ask that question when you're using the report. Because, I mean, one of the things that we do and that we like doing in the report is looking at what organizations that characterize themselves as successful with their use of learning and technology. You know, what are they doing that seems to stand them out from the pack? So we ask in organizations to self-identify. And, you know, among the ones that are very successful, we've found some characteristics that they tend to have. You know, one of the key ones is that, not surprisingly, they tend to report increased net revenue from their education offerings broadly, as a result of their use of technology for learning. So, you know, 76.7% of those organizations that identify themselves as very successful are going to have increased net revenue versus, you know, less than 50%, 48.1% of just the broader group that we surveyed. So, you know, certainly the more successful organizations are making more money at this, as might be expected.
You know, they're also making use of some formats more frequently than others. The organizations that self-identify as very successful are more likely to offer self-paced online courses. They're also more likely to offer facilitated online courses, and they're more likely to offer at least some mobile learning. And again, back on the copycat note, you know, we're certainly not saying you should be offering self-paced online courses or facilitated online courses or mobile learning or that offering any of those is going to make you successful. But I think what it shows is that there's some willingness to be thoughtful about how they're approaching learning. You know, having a facilitated online course and the self-paced online courses often take a little bit more time and effort than the real-time webinars. Now, that's a pretty gross generalization, not always true. But, you know, I think there's at least here the suggestion that the very successful are being thoughtful about how they approach their learning and are maybe also kind of open to some experimentation and trying some different formats.
Definitely. And we also find that those groups that identify as very successful are making much more use of professional instructional designers. And those can be contract instructional designers, or they can be, you know, people on staff who are definitely identified and have that background as an instructional designer, quite a bit more likely to be using those than just the broader group of organizations doing learning and technology. And that can be a bit of a double-edged sword. It goes to this, you know, strategy question. You know, we've made the point before before that good design is often the enemy of good learning, because you can get bogged down in trying to be too perfect, trying to engineer the perfect learning experience, and not really be nimble enough, not really sort of leave enough with the user to be able to engage in the right way and to get at what the user really needs. But that said, good design can also be extremely powerful if you're able to balance it with making sure you're understanding your market and what you're doing is really nimble and resonating with the market.
We also found that those who self-rate themselves as very successful, they tend to do a better job of making use of their data. They tend to integrate the data that they're collecting in their learning platforms with other technology platforms, and they also tend to use that data always or frequently to make those product decisions. They tend to do that more often. So, again, it's about making use of what they have out there so that they can be making informed decisions that really are grounded in evidence of what the market needs and wants.
And here's a big one. Those that self-identify as very successful are much, much more likely to have a formal documented strategy for their learning and education business. And that's, 60% versus 37.7% in this case. So pretty big leap between those groups. And they're also much more likely to have a strategy for how technology will be used to enable or enhance learning.
And then kind of related to the strategy question is that they're much more likely to have processes in place for some of the key aspects of a learning business. So they're more likely to have a product development process and a process for setting prices that covers their use of technology for learning. And so, again, that's just a few characteristics that we noticed in looking at those that self-identified as very successful. But we want to stress again that successful organizations are doing these things, but that doesn't mean that you necessarily need to run out and do these things. But they do suggest, that the organizations that are successful are more focused. They're taking a professional approach to the use of technology for learning and a professional approach to their learning business in general.
Yeah, it's a combination, I'd say, of, strategy, process, good design, but balanced with an entrepreneurial instinct, a willingness to take some risks, to try out some of the new things that are out there and see, how those operate, which really should be the basis of good design and good strategy anyway. So they're kind of pulling all of that together. And as you say, it's a more focused, more professional effort around technology and learning. And we'll repeat, one more time that you can get all of these stats and, other ones that we've mentioned in the show notes. So definitely, be sure to grab those at leadinglearning.com/episode99.
As we're exiting, we want to say thanks to Your Membership. You can find out more about Your Membership and all it offers at yourmembership.com.
As I've already mentioned, you can get the show notes at episode 99, but while you're there, you're also going to see how to access the Association Learning Plus Technology Report, and you're going to see various options for subscribing to the podcast. And if you're getting value out of the podcast, if you like being able to get things like, this report on what's going on out there with learning and technology in the association sector, then we would be truly, truly grateful if you would subscribe.
So after you view the show notes at leadinglearning.com/episode99. You can head to leadinglearning.com/iTunes, and that will allow you to give us a rating on iTunes. It takes just a minute, and we really appreciate it because it makes it much easier for others to find this podcast.
And please consider telling others about the podcast. You can walk down the hall and knock on their door and tell them to go to leadinglearning.com. You can send them an email about it, or you can send out a tweet simply by going to leadinglearning.com/share. Or if tweeting isn't your thing, pick whatever social network you feel comfortable with, Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever it is, and get that leadinglearning.com address in there and tell folks I'm getting a lot of value out of this.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.